From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Wednesday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio. Today on the show, Austin Barber, kind of our resident political strategist, also with Strategic Partners in Media, and more. Austin will discuss the tad turbulent days of the Donald Trump presidency as we moved into to month four or so of that. He was at the beer garden last week, but it's been a pretty busy week. So here we are again with Austin. He'll discuss some different things with us for 20 minutes or so.
Things took a turn yesterday. Yeah. I'm not saying the end is nigh, but I'm not saying it's not.
Yeah, so that and more on today's show. We'll get to that. We'll do some baseball. We'll do some softball and more on today's podcast. Got the audio fixed a little bit today, I think. I feel better about our system, our
Don't
setup
jinx
today.
It.
Well, I mean, we're moving now. Like, I can see it. I'm seeing some levels. I'm seeing some different things. Your voice was incredibly overamplified the last week or so, cracking and different things.
A lot of it is just the power of my voice.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
My lack of knowledge of a soundboard may be involved with that as well.
It's
but
possible.
Either one,
or it might just be the power of my voice, the way that it resonates through the airwaves.
Anyone coming into town this weekend for softball or anything else, stop on Highway 6 West, the Oxford Exxon, the Oxford Crystal. Get some specials at both places, $4.99 lunch specials at the Oxford Exxon. You can get ribs. You can get the Plenty Card. You save money just by signing up for the Plenty Card and using it with multiple partners, including Hulu, Nationwide, Rite Aid, American Express, and more there on Highway 6 West. Any critical location throughout Mississippi, up and down I-55. And throughout North Mississippi as well. At the Oxford Crystal, it's 5 for $5 mix and match. Includes the country fried steak. Includes the fried chicken crystal as well. So those things and more. Highway 6 West in Oxford. Next door to each other, the Oxford Crystal and the Oxford Exxon. And we're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio.
We are Clark Ford in Amory, 662-257-1900. 662-257-1900. ClarkFordInc.com. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. And then it's up to you. You can take the quote and shop it, or you can take that quote and let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they have done for listeners of this podcast for a couple of years now, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. You'll get a great deal on a great car, fantastic service, all of those things at Clark Ford in Amory. And then at the end of your deal, tell Corey, hey, I heard about the dealership on the podcast. You can mention this podcast. You can mention the Beer Garden podcast. Either one, $500 off the bottom line on your deal at Clark Ford in Amory, 662-257-1900.
Last night in Jonesboro, Arkansas, Ole Miss falls to the Red Wolves 5-0. The Rebels facing a kid that I don't know his name, and Brian Ayers, I believe. 7.56 ERA coming in. He threw 7 shutout innings against Ole Miss. Rebels get 5 hits, 4 of those hits with the bases empty, as they went 1-14 with runners on base, 0-6 runners in scoring position. Arkansas State scores 3 runs in the first inning of Sean Johnson, the senior right-hander, and then chipped in a couple more runs along the way. So 5-0 against a team that was ranked 188 in the RPI. It was on the road. Ole Miss falls from 31-34 in the RPI. They also fall to, let's see, 31-22 overall on the season. They are 13-14 in the league, and they head to Auburn this weekend, Thursday to Saturday on the Plains. 6-6-1 are your start times in those three games. Ole Miss really could use 2 to feel good about things going into next week. If they win 1, we'll see. Obviously, if they won all 3, then don't even take certain guys to Hoover for sure, but probably even with 2 there. So, anyway, I don't think last night had a huge impact on anything. It wasn't the best optic. It wasn't the best thing from an RPI standpoint, but I still think the weekend's going to carry much more weight. And that final conference record and the final conference standing will be more important for Ole Miss, as it is one heck of a weak bubble this year. A lot of teams lost last night, so do just enough, and you'll probably be okay in a week or so.
Yeah, I'm not trying to be Mr. Hot Take here. I just don't think last night mattered. Auburn matters. They've got to win one. Would feel a lot better about life if they won two. Obviously can completely eliminate any doubt by winning three. Lose three and you're not getting in. So that would be the case if they'd gone to Jonesboro last night and won 21-0 and thrown a perfect game.
So you do not believe last night had any impact on their season whatsoever?
Not really, no. I mean, if you're 14-16 and you're sitting on the bubble and you go to Hoover next week and you lose on Tuesday and you have 5 days and the committee is nitpicking their way through the bottom five teams to throw the last two in, well, yeah, it might hurt. I don't think they're going to go, well, you know, I was going to let Ole Miss in, but they lost in Jonesboro. They're out. All the teams they'll be compared against at that point will have big warts. None of these are the prettiest girl at the pageant.
Like huge warts.
Yeah.
Some big pot marks.
Big marks, like a
acne
big
scars.
Swollen thing. Yeah, or 35, 40 pounds overweight.
You're basically looking for positives at this point. Go, hey, you know, that's yeah. Okay.
All of these people are going, these teams, these last, look, this.
If we just described a bubble team, what the hell does Alabama look like?
Oh, a cyclops.
Okay.
But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
These are not the beautiful girls. These are not the supermodels that are.
Yeah, like Oregon State, that's Bo Derek.
Yeah, she's in. Florida.
Yeah.
She's a tall blonde walking down the beach in her white bikini and every eye is turning.
Maybe the little Cindy Crawford thing, but that's it.
Where maybe, but it's good. Almost a beauty mark at this point. We're not talking about that. It's just reality. And forgive me for being sexist. I'm being a jerk. But you know what I mean. Ole Miss isn't going to be compared to Florida in the eyes of the committee. The committee is looking at Ole Miss and comparing it to other.
Real quick, by the way, I was referencing the movie 10, and I didn't say it. So it was really odd when I pulled out a 60-year-old there for my comparison.
I knew what you meant.
Yeah, I was talking about the movie 10, and I didn't say 10.
I immediately reverted back to junior high school, spending the night at Neil Fuller's house, watching 10 on HBO. And it was kind of forbidden back then, you know?
You watched 10 on HBO back in the day?
Yeah, 1 in the morning, it'd come back on the repeat. You're all out there. If you're my age, roughly, you remember. And if you were lucky, your friend had Cinemax. Late night, you never knew what you might see. Learn all sorts of stuff. It's not like now where you're like, you know, I want to see naked girls. Email. I mean, you know, web. No, we didn't have a
web. You were waiting on the 11 p.m. Skinemax?
We were hoping that Mr. Fuller would leave so that we could get into his stash.
Yeah. 10 was a movie from...
When was it, like mid-70s, right?
1979.
Yeah. So it came on HBO, probably 80, 81.
It's her and Dudley Moore.
I couldn't tell you who else was in it.
You know Dudley Moore, like in Arthur.
I just remember her running down the beach. Okay. I don't remember anything about Dudley Moore running down the
Arthur's
beach.
Arthur's one of my favorite movies in the world.
It's a good movie.
I love Arthur.
Good movie.
And quoted, it makes me laugh. I don't know. It puts me in a really good mood. And the remake had me so pissed off for months. With Russell Brand, they did the little Arthur remake. Oh, don't. No. Dudley Moore plays the best drunk on screen of anyone, always. There's no doubt. That he absolutely is the best drunk from an actor standpoint. But anyway, you all right over there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
All good.
It's like early in the movie, and he's like, you're a hooker? Thought I was just doing really well. It's like, yeah, that's good. Anyway. Okay, baseball, Auburn this weekend. Again, yeah, win a couple, we'll see. And Hoover, they can be the 7 to the 10, I think, maybe the 6, but probably one of those middle games next week.
The great thing is if they go win 2 out of 3 this weekend, Hoover doesn't matter at all.
any? Because I've gotten the questions. Look, I'm not mad about it. I understand it. It goes, hey, if they swept through, it's like they can't host. So to me, you're being counterproductive by winning over there, honestly. Pitchers are having to throw innings. You're having to stress some things to get it done, and I just don't think there's enough positive in that. There's not enough to gain. Yeah, you can't host. They can literally run the entire thing.
No, they're not hosting, nor do they deserve to host. Even if they go win three in a row at Auburn and go to Hoover and play gorgeous baseball and win a championship, they did not do enough to host.
That would make them 21-14 in the league.
Yeah, but that's not the way we looked at.
I know.
Would they be a really good team playing hot? Yeah, my concern for them at that point would be that they would be on fumes.
They lost because they didn't play well enough. But even last year, I'm not sure that the three or four wins in a row and that was all great going into the regional when they already had a host spot locked up. And they didn't get the national seed.
Because they didn't appear to be super fresh.
Yeah, they didn't play well in the regional.
Here's the problem with Hoover, and I can hear fans yelling at me, so I'm so glad you're on the same page with me right here. Because it's a tournament, and because some fans go, it becomes a bigger deal than it is. And I know you get a trophy and a championship. I get it.
The pyramid.
You get a pyramid and a title. A t-shirt.
And the big SEC sign for you to walk around the field with.
T-shirts and a hat.
Yeah.
I get it. It becomes an emotional thing. So instead of just playing regular baseball, you're playing emotional baseball. Starting on about Friday, it gets emotional. Saturday's real emotional. And you get to Sunday, and if you're not careful, you're playing your Super Bowl. And you win, and you dogpile, and you act like the... What did it mean? What did it really mean?
The next Friday, you're actually going to throw a pitch that's going to matter.
Yeah, because you got to get up Monday and start getting ready for games that matter. You lose on Saturday in the SEC tournament, what does it mean? Go home. Going home. Get ready. What does it mean if you lose the next Saturday? Well, it means you're either eliminated or you just put yourself in the loser's bracket. That's what it means. So which game matters more, the Saturday in Hoover or the Saturday in wherever? Wherever?
Yeah.
Not even close. Those games in Hoover aren't elimination games, but before you know it, you're playing them like they are. And coaches fall into the trap. You see it every year. Coach, you can see almost a coach go, well, I guess we got to play this thing like it matters.
And then there's a willpower to coaching that tournament.
And it's hard because coaches are competitive people. All of a sudden you go, it would be kind of nice to win. It would make some boosters happy. People like me. Take a little.
Wouldn't hurt my situation to throw a title up there.
Yeah, line on my resume.
SEC champions.
SEC champions, baby. No. Look, Ole Miss is going to go to Auburn and win 2 out of 3. They're going to go 15-15 in the league. They're going to go to a regional as a 2 or a 3, either a low 2 or a high 3, whatever. I'm telling you, it doesn't matter. And we'll see. If I'm Ole Miss, if I get out of Auburn with 2 wins or 3 wins, I go to Hoover and it's like, you've been wanting to pitch? Here's the ball. Go for it.
Hey, Carolina, here's a gift today.
And Carolina's going to be on the other side going, no, I don't want that. You go pitch.
Well, no, Carolina needs that son of a gun.
Yeah, I don't. They might not be capable of winning anymore.
They play Georgia this weekend. Carolina's 12-15 in the league, I think.
They lose 2 or 3, and they ain't gonna matter.
They lose 1, it won't matter. They have to sweep Georgia, and I'm not even. They might be the fifth. They're so funny because the RPI is like 30. It's in good shape. It's 29-28. They've lost 7 series in a row. So if you go win one or win, say you sweep. You're 15-15 in the league with a 30 RPI. You're fine, right? But you've won 1 of 8?
Probably still get in.
What do you do there?
I don't know. I don't know the rest of the national landscape, and I don't know what the agenda will be of the committee. Are we growing the game, or are we just putting teams in?
Kendall believes Carolina's in absolute deep crap.
Well, Kendall would usually know.
Yeah. He thinks they're in big trouble.
What's he think about Ole Miss? He thinks they win one they're in, right?
Aaron Fitt believes if they get to 14-16, they're fine.
Kendall thinks 15-15?
I haven't talked to Kendall about it.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, those two guys would know.
More than anyone else.
So the committee, it'll come down to whether they're, are we being politically correct?
You know, last year had Ole Miss won the conference tournament and won two more games. They're probably a national seed last year, honestly. I think they were playing for something by that point.
Right.
If they lose the day one or day three, it wouldn't have mattered.
Right.
But if
they still would have hosted
through it. No matter what.
Right.
But they were probably playing for a seed when they lost to A&M on that Saturday. You know, obviously cross sports, but same setup. The softball team had to go win the tournament. They needed to win that tournament last weekend to host.
To host.
Yeah. Yeah, they were in no matter what.
Yeah, before anybody thinks I'm just saying the tournament's meaningless.
It depends on situation.
I'm not saying it's meaningless, but I am saying there are typically years where there are multiple teams that are in it that it's meaningless. The tournament is meaningless to the Florida Gators next week.
Yeah.
Utterly. The only thing that could possibly happen is bad.
Yeah, injuries.
Who's the coach there? What's his name?
Kevin O'Sullivan.
Kevin O'Sullivan. He sits down and goes, what could go right? What could go wrong? The list of what could go right is one line.
Title.
Nobody gets hurt.
Yeah.
Hey, he's thinking about getting to Omaha, period.
He's got one of those other titles. It didn't do much for him.
If you offer him, hey, we can give you a regional, super regional championship title or an SEC tournament title, you pick. I don't like that stupid pyramid anyway. I don't need the pyramid. I want to go to Omaha. He's got a team that could get to Omaha. He's got a team that's built to get to Omaha. He's not worried about Hoover. Get the hell out of Hoover. Before some pitcher, one of his better pitchers, ground ball gets hit to first, and he's doing the run over for the 3-1 put out, and he turns his ankle on the bag. You don't want that. No, God, no. Let's get out of here. Who else is in that category going into the tournament already?
I mean, for sure, national seed. Florida, Kentucky, maybe. See how they finish, but maybe.
Who's for sure hosting? LSU.
LSU.
State.
RPI is funny. State. Yeah. State needs a good weekend this weekend. Well, State plays LSU.
So State could go to Hoover playing for something.
State
with all their fans and their media and it could be.
I mean, State's 17-10 maybe. Hold on.
And LSU's starting to play better, right?
Oh, they're hot.
Yeah.
LSU's really hot.
That's what they do. Somehow, some way.
Who you got, LSU or State this weekend?
LSU.
Do you?
It's May, right?
State is 34-19.
Okay.
17-10. Huge SEC record. RPI, though, at 24. RPI is a little funny there. I don't see how you leave out a host team in the SEC that wins 18 games, though. It's hard to imagine a team not hosting at 18 and
12. No, if they win 18 games, they should host.
They would be 35-21. That's a fringy host record. 35-21, 18-12 in the SEC with an RPI around 22, probably. 21, somewhere in there.
Should host.
But that's volatile going to Hoover. You probably don't want to lose on Wednesday and Thursday and go home.
No, win a game.
Yeah. Just a guess there. From the conference standpoint.
If I'm Mike, I want to win on Tuesday and then I'll
get into the double elimination.
And then whatever. Who cares then?
Yeah, Kentucky's got a 7 RPI, so maybe they're playing for national seeding. I don't know. It's up to you to decide.
Frankly, if I'm Mike and I can win 2 or 3 in Auburn, let me just get to Friday in Hoover.
You want to get to Friday.
Friday and be done. Head home for a week to heal.
So you want to win Tuesday and then Wednesday or Thursday?
Yeah, let me win Tuesday and then win Wednesday or Thursday. Lose Wednesday or Thursday and we'll throw out.
And I don't really want to, if I had to completely pick and I'm doing that, I don't really want to lose 2 in a row. So let's win Tuesday and Thursday.
Yeah, go WLWL.
Yeah. All good. Yeah. Hung around for a while.
It's all cool. I don't know that I want to get to Saturday and I'm having to play people.
You're really stressing at that point.
A fifth game and
you get tempted to throw a bullpen arm that you probably shouldn't throw right there.
Well, now Colby Bortles has a back issue. Got the Rowe with the hamstring issue. I got people. And then now we're playing emotional. We're really legging one out. I don't know that I want that. And I can hear fans going, you're a loser. You know no, if I'm good enough to do that, I'm good enough to get hot in a regional and win. Here's what I know about a regional. If you're Ole Miss and you're the two or the three, either one, you win on Friday in a regional, all you've got to do is win one game. You've got to beat one really good team one time, and then you're set. You get to sit and wait. You get to sit and wait.
Hey, one seed, go play that other team again. We'll holler at you later.
Do I want to position myself for that one game, or do I want to position myself for seven games? It's easy. One.
Well, yeah, you make a good point there. It's kind of like, I mean, again, we're going to get softball in a second, but sentence that I wouldn't have thought last week. with baseball, if you can make that run in Hoover till Saturday, what you just did on your side of the bracket, much better and more complicated than what you're going to see in a regional the next week.
Yes.
The field is tons better.
Yes.
I mean, it's kind of like the confidence that softball team gets from winning the SEC tournament. It's a freaking Oklahoma City bracket. I mean, last year there were four SEC teams like all in one side. Maybe that was 2 years ago. I don't know. It all runs together. Apparently, SEC teams make the Women's College World Series a lot these days.
That appears to be the case.
Well, the whole league did get in.
Yeah.
The entire freaking league.
Numbers are in their favor.
Vanderbilt doesn't play?
I think that's right.
Why?
They don't want to.
Why don't they play?
They don't want to.
Is it not weird?
Probably just says it's not worth it.
Should they have some reason?
I mean, whatever. Give college softball people credit. They don't appear to care who gets to Oklahoma City. Give them the big schools.
They want the names.
SEC, Big 12.
Yeah, they want names. When you're flipping the TV, you see Michigan, Ole Miss, Alabama, Florida, UCLA.
Yeah.
They know that you're much more likely to stop on Tennessee versus Alabama than you are.
But what about growing the sport?
Coastal Carolina, Gonzaga.
What about growing the sport, Chase?
Give me the Clydesdales.
I'm with Colin Cowherd on this, where he talks about the NCAA basketball tournament. Everybody likes that first round. Everybody loves to cheer for, you know,
the Georgia States of the world,
Queen Elizabeth Central State. Nobody wants her in the Sweet 16.
Yeah,
I want to watch Duke. I want to watch North Carolina. I want to watch Kentucky, Louisville. I'm probably in the mass majority. Give me the names.
We'll flip in a minute, but let's go to Austin Barber first. Talk a little politics here on the podcast. But we do that, tell you about Master Cuts. It's a full-service lawn and landscape company serving the Oxford, Tupelo, surrounding areas, founded on two simple philosophies. They do what they say they're going to do when they say they're going to do it, and they have open and honest communication with customers as well as employees. Took care of my lawn earlier in the week. Did a great job as always. No job too large or small for Master Cuts. Some of their services include landscape design and installation, landscape lighting, irrigation, maintenance, and turf, even though holiday lighting, if you like that during the holiday season. So give them a call, free quote, 662-607-7773, mastercutsalon.com. If you sign up for an annual contract, mention the podcast, first cut is on them.
The podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, look no further than Grenada Nissan. They've got a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissans, great lease deals as well. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. School is just about out for summer, and the Oxford Park Commission is just as excited as you are. Their summer program lineup is going to keep you active while making memories you won't forget. Tennis, golf, gymnastics, cheerleading, fencing, and karate are just a few of the many activities youth and adults can participate in. Registration is ongoing through May the 31st. For more information, visit www.oxfordparkcommission.com. Like them on Facebook at Oxford Park Commission. Follow them on Twitter at Oxford Parks Rec, or on Instagram at Oxford Parks. Live well, play well, have fun. The podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based REMAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market better than he does. Go to his site. He'll prove it to you. It's harryalexander.com. click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab. You can look at what's available. It's updated daily. Then send him an email. It's ha@harryalexander.com.
Now, Austin Barber, Rebel Locker Room Hotline.
All right, Austin, you joined me about a week ago or so on the Beer Garden, and we talked about Trump's first 100 days. I'll start with this. Does he have another 100 days, or is this – what is – this is – man, this is like – I follow Michael Beschloss on Twitter because he tweets really cool stuff, and yesterday he was tweeting a lot of cryptic stuff, pointing out sort of how Watergate got started with obstruction of justice and stuff, clearly making – a connection between the two. I watched a lot of cable news last night. There is a lot of speculation on the Hill that this is the beginning of the end.
That guy is a great follow on Twitter. And for those who didn't catch, I think it's Michael. I think he spells last name Beschloss maybe. And he's a presidential historian. And he always just has some really cool old photos. He's a great person to follow, but yeah, I did see that yesterday. He was tweeting some stuff about Nixon and you look, we're probably being hyperbolic with those type comparisons, but you never know. And I guess I found myself before I got on the phone with you guys looking at some of the history, of how the Watergate scandal ended up, of course, bringing President Nixon down. But it is, yeah, you good point. Does he have another 100 days? Well, yeah, I mean, absolutely he can. And he can still get things done if they can just get out of their own damn way. That is, sorry to be so blunt, but they've got to figure that out.
So, you know, this all started, this Michael Flynn thing got started in January, in the very early days of his presidency. He was told by the deputy director of the FBI, or the CIA, I get lost in some of this, you can help me, but he was told that Flynn was compromised with the Russians. And instead of neutralizing Flynn at that moment, suspending him, firing him, he doubled down in his support of Flynn. Less than 3 weeks later, he lets Flynn go. Says it's a trust issue, which is dubious at best. The FBI, Comey, continues the investigation into Flynn, into Russia, into the Trump campaign connections to Russia during the election. And then this thing explodes with the report yesterday in the Washington Post and elsewhere that Trump asked Comey to end the agency's investigation into ties between former White House National Security Advisor Michael Flynn and Russia. And obviously, when Comey refused, he was fired. You mentioned the White House getting out of its own way. If you're running the White House right now, if you had the president's ear, what would you tell him?
It's the toughest job in the world right now, the guy who's running the White House. The senior staff, the members of the senior staff of the White House, I feel, you know, I do have compassion for those folks because, look, most of them were big Trump supporters or they wouldn't be in that position, but there may have been some who, you know, who knows where they were during the election, but when the president calls you, you answer the phone and you take the job, unless you're just, you know, morally opposed to them. So the communication staff and, you know, all three of us, you know, Neil and Chase and I, we're in the business of communicating with people. It's really hard to get on message. And that's what we always say. You want to be on message when you don't know what your boss is going to say from minute to minute, from day to day. And I say minute to minute because he has the most powerful communication tool known to man in the 21st century, Twitter, the instantaneous ability to be able to send a message to, you know, tens of millions of people, and you do not know what he's going to say. Neil, imagine that job. Chase, imagine that job right now. You couldn't do it.
No, there's not enough whiskey in the world.
But think about this. I last night before I went to sleep, I wanted to do a little research for this. Give me just a second to go through this.
Sure.
I wanted to just kind of list for everybody and for y'all what the White House has had to deal with. These are stories that either the New York Times has written. These are stories at CNN, Washington Post. And look, do I believe in some ways that the press is out to out to get Trump, but they don't like Trump? Well, of course. But we just said he and his staff have given them a lot of ammunition to write about. But here it is. As you just said, one of the first issues, he fires Comey, mostly as attack for the timing of it. Even Ted Cruz said, fire him in January, I'm with you, do it now, it's a terrible story. Okay. Next story, he shares intel about ISIS in the Oval Office with Russians the other day, classified intelligence that the Israelis had given the U.S., and he wasn't supposed to do it.
And potentially compromised that source and almost certainly compromised the ability to get for that source, compromised the ability for that source to provide further information.
He didn't pretend. We watched enough Homeland and TV to know he didn't potentially. He did.
Yeah.
He did.
Probably got somebody killed.
The third thing is, and we just went through this, the inability for the White House communication staff to get their story straight, even the vice president. The vice president came out and said he fired Comey, head of the FBI, former head of the FBI, because of the assistant attorney general's report. Well, then Trump comes out with Lester Holt and NBC and goes, nah, I was going to do it no matter what. I didn't like the guy. Fourth story, the staff being just completely surprised by the Comey announcement, not prepared for it. Terrible story about how Sean Spicer and his staff did not want to, you know, walk through the alleyway, have to deal with the press, and they were literally behind the bushes trying to figure out what they were going to say. Fifth story, and this one just really kind of pisses me off, that Kimberly Guilfoyle, who does some Fox News commentary, this lady is allegedly being, do y'all know who she is?
Yeah.
Okay. She's allegedly being considered to be the new Sean Spicer role, the communications director, the spokesman, whatever you want to call it, for the White House. She went on the record yesterday with a newspaper in California and said, oh yeah, I'm being considered for that job. Who in the world would ever do that? You're being considered, and obviously those are private conversations. You've got someone who's had the job for 100 days. He's under all kind of heat and speculation, and all of a sudden you're going to come say, "Well, I'm being considered for it." I mean, what kind of that? I don't understand that at all. I mean, and obviously she should can no way be hired for that job after showing that's how she would deal with the press. I'm sorry, I'm going to go quickly through the next ones. The sixth thing, the embassy attack yesterday in Washington, where you had Turkish, guards for the prime minister of Turkey attacking protesters on U.S. soil. It's absolutely ridiculous. If you haven't seen the video, you need to go see it.
Yeah, I saw it. It's very disturbing.
Yeah, seventh story, obviously this is, the biggest story is about the New York Times, came out yesterday. Comey wrote a memo saying Trump asked him to drop the investigation on Michael Flynn. Eighth story, the continuing efforts by the White House staffers or top administrators to continue to leak information and talk on background to the press. Ninth story, seems like forever ago, but, the White House held a big press conference, a rally, after the House passed, got rid of Obamacare. Ninth story, Trump tweeted essentially threatening messages to Comey saying, hey, you better hope our meetings in the Oval Office weren't recorded. Tenth story, the House is now calling on an investigation of Comey memo with the Trump meetings. Even had a top member, Trey Gowdy, who said, quote, we're a long way from an investigation. And then two more, the Trump press staff who's going on Fox News and they're saying this Russian story needs to go away. American public doesn't care about it. Well, the American public does care about it now. Oh, yeah. And then I guess the last one is the North Korean successfully launched a missile this weekend that could potentially hold a nuke. Think about that. I just gave you 10 or 11 huge stories from the past week.
And they haven't been in office 4 months.
It is unreal. Now, some of these things, are normal stuff that you'd have to deal with, but most are stuff they have brought upon themselves. And I do understand the dynamic that a lot of people, friends of mine, even people that I talked to last night, said, oh, the press really hates him. This is unfair.
Well, yes, the press does hate him. But there's no question about that. I mean, the people that say the media is objective, no, the media is not objective. The media is out of control in this, except for the fact that in this case, for the last 4 months, almost without fail, Trump or the Trump administration has fueled them legitimate stuff to go after.
I can't argue with it without.
So,
that is the retort to someone who says, well, the press hates them. Well, yeah, there are members of the press who work for the New York Times or CNN or MSNBC or whomever who despise Donald Trump. There's no question about that. But that doesn't mean you have to go hand them these stories on a silver platter.
I'll give you a sports analogy. There are people in the sports media, trust me, I know them, who hate Nick Saban. Hate him. But he wins, stays out of trouble, has no scandal.
That's a great analogy. It is. He knows how to run a program that, for the most part, stays out of the limelight. And these are the main issues that the Trump administration and his staff, or President Trump and his senior staff, have struggled with. I mean, listen, we have said this for a long time. This guy could be really successful because he's got a Republican Congress who's dying to do big things on taxes, infrastructure, banking reform, immigration. They are dying to do that. At least that's what they say. But hell, they can't even get to that because of all this.
So what's next? I'm guessing here Comey is going to be called to testify on the Hill.
Oh yeah.
That's going to be televised. It's going to be public record. It's going to be potentially explosive stuff, right? I mean,
it is going to be the next big step with this. And I mean, how many other, if Comey left, and this is what it was reported by the New York Times yesterday, that the president had called Comey into, I even heard a little more detail, which was, and you guys probably heard this as well, that there was a quasi national security meeting. Comey was there, the head of the CIA was there, the vice president was there, the attorney general was there, and this is a normal kind of meeting where they're talking about national security issues, and that allegedly the president asked everybody to step out of the room except for Comey. And that's when he had the conversation with him about, hey, I don't have the direct quote in front of me, but basically essentially said, take it easy.
Let it go.
Let this go with, maybe that was the direct quote, let it go with Flynn. Comey leaves there, goes back to his office, writes a memo about this is what the president asked me to do.
Yeah, according to the Times, Trump said, quote, this is according to Comey's memo, I hope you can see your way clear to letting this go, to letting Flynn go. He is a good guy. I hope you can let this go.
Yeah. I mean, listen, for the country's sake, I want Donald Trump to be successful. I do. Because if he's successful, that means taxes are getting lower, jobs are being created, roads are getting paved, we're a stronger country. That's what we want. But I do worry. I really do worry.
So far, Pence seems to be kind of in the clear, right?
He may just be sitting there going, okay, hey, I'm ready, coach. Need be, but obviously we don't want to get to that because we're in serious trouble if we have to get there.
Yeah, the people cheering for that are putting party in front of country. The people who are cheering for an impeachment, for him to leave the office in disgrace, are cheering for party over country. And I mean, the Republicans did this with Bill Clinton years ago with the Lewinsky thing. They put party over country. A disgraced president leaving office is never a good thing for your country, regardless of what party he or she might be affiliated with.
Yeah, it's not a good look. It's not a good look, and it diminishes our powers, our power around the world. And that's not what we need right now. With, you know, you've got the Russians who are much more aggressive than they've been in you know, decades. And you've got ISIS, you've got North Korea, you've got China. It's not what we need. What we need is the president to get on message, to talk about jobs, to talk about the issues that he talked about on the campaign, and then for them to go and perform and get those things done working with Congress. He's about to go off for a 7 or 8 or 9 day tour. I'm not exactly sure where he's going. I know he's going to be in the Middle East, and that'll be a big trip for him. Can he turn the tide? That will be a huge trip for him.
Reuters this morning reporting that Russian President Vladimir Putin said today that Trump did not pass any secrets to Russian Foreign Minister Sergey Lavrov during a meeting in Washington last week, and that he could prove it. Putin speaking at a news conference in Sochi, how do you say that? Sochi? In the Black Sea resort of Sochi.
I think that's right.
Putin said that Lavrov was remiss for not passing on what he made clear he believed were non-existent secrets. Quote, I spoke to him today, referring to Lavrov. I'll be forced to issue him with a reprimand because he did not share these secrets with us, not with me, nor with representatives of Russia's intelligence service. It was very bad of him. I'm not even sure that it's good for Trump right now that Putin is coming out as his
he's just trolling on him.
He's trolling him big time, isn't he?
Yeah, Vladimir Putin understands that game better than anybody. He's the ultimate troll. He makes people on your message board look like amateurs.
So this is all going to happen in terms of this is going to go on Capitol Hill. It is going to dominate the news cycle for a while. Is it survivable for a president? And when I say that, I don't mean being able to just stay in office, but to get back on track, to get back to your domestic agenda, your foreign agenda, to run the country. Or are we now in for, the midterms are coming up in a year and a half. Let's get real. Are we in for a year and a half of damage control leading into a midterm election, which will likely strip him of his mandate at this point? And I use the word mandate very lightly.
Yeah, no, at this point, yeah. Listen, yes, it is. But they've just said this, and I go back to it because it is the obvious. Don't miss the forest for the trees with this point. They have got to go get some things done on Capitol Hill. They've got to go pass some meaningful legislation. So then he can go get on the road and say, guess what? The press hates me. But you know what? I'm doing my job. We just did a complete repeal and replacement of Obamacare. I signed the bill. This is what it'll do. We just passed a brand new infrastructure bill, jobs, roads, new bridges coming to your district, your town later this year. If he can go do things like that, yes, you absolutely can. You can rally the base. You can get back to the message that you had on the campaign. But if you're just constantly going to be, you know, giving ammunition to the press and about issues that you're having within your own White House, and you can't get things done to better the country like you said you were, it is really a lot of trouble. But I will say this again. He can turn the tide, but, you know, they got to go get some serious legislation passed and working on those types of things, because if he waits too much longer, he's going to begin to lose major credibility with even Republicans on Capitol Hill. Can read their own quotes. When you see Bob Corker, the U.S. Senator from Tennessee, who was a Trump supporter, who says we got to have a lot less. That was McConnell who said we got to have a lot less drama in the White House. But Corker basically said they got to get their shit together. Excuse my language. In the White House.
Last thing, you mentioned the Republicans. Let's face it, the Republican Party was never for Donald Trump. They just got in their own way, and Trump, I guess to his credit, saw a path and took it and is in the White House today. How much further does this go before some of the Republicans say, all right, we have to completely cut ties with them, meaning in terms of on Capitol Hill and everything else, and people start to sort of position themselves for the 2020 campaign, potentially running against Trump for the nomination?
We'll see where we are this time next year. Obviously, we're going to go into midterm elections with 2018. Every member of the House will be up for election. A third of the U.S. Senate will be up for election. There is a great opportunity for Republicans to pick up more seats, to go from 54 to 55, 56, 57 in the Senate, because there are a lot of Democrats in conservative states, even states that Trump won, purple states, blue states, Democrat senators that are up for election in 2018. If we are in the same place 1 year from now and they have not passed some meaningful legislation, you will have Republicans who will say, I'm out. If they do, if they cut down the drama, if they get some things done on Capitol Hill, you will have Republicans say, he does his own thing, but we're getting some stuff done and we're with him.
Austin, as always, thanks for the time and the insight. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, guys. Y'all have a good day.
You too. Again, our thanks to Austin for his time. If your company is interested in some corporate crisis management, some an ad campaign, just anything, a corporate communications plan, get in touch with Austin and his friends at Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. It's Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Austin joined us on the Rebel Locker Room hotline, the Rebel Locker Room, West Jackson Avenue in Oxford. It's the place to go to get all of your officially licensed Ole Miss gear, all the colors, all the styles there at the Rebel Locker Room. This weekend, obviously, Ole Miss softball, we'll talk about it in a second. The Rebels play at 8:30 against Southern Illinois. I don't think tickets are available. You can keep checking. It's OleMissTix.com. I think there are actually tickets on the secondary market, which is a sentence that, no offense, I never thought I'd say, but appears to be true. But Ole Miss football season tickets are available. OleMissTix.com. Again, that's OleMissTix.com.
Yeah. New world we're living in. We'll get to it in a minute. Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga, 30 years old this year, one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. Our underwriting and processing done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting and understand your market. Also the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. So ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float-down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. You can contact him at 662-234-2704 or at jlowe, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. Yeah, I was actually looking that up a second ago. Story up on the site this morning. I talked to Lynette Johnson. She's the senior woman administrator for Ole Miss. Also the executive associate athletic director, handles a lot of women's sports. She discussed the hotel situation that we'd mentioned earlier in the week on the podcast. Also tickets sold to this point. They have sold 1,300 and something tickets. They also have 300 and something tickets allotted for the other participating teams and just some different miscellaneous things that they have to use those for. Big, big crowd in Oxford. I'd heard from some people that maybe didn't have the priority level necessary for tickets, which is another amazing sentence for this, is people that actually kind of go to the games a lot were having some trouble getting there just because of priority, and it just is what it is. I mean, there's no really, you know.
It sucks. And that's life.
Yeah, I mean,
it doesn't make it suck less.
I've heard a lot of people though trying to get tickets for this thing. Tons.
Yeah,
it is a very difficult ticket right now. I looked because I was curious for the story and just out of my own benefit. Ole Miss is going to have whatever capacity is this weekend, 1,700, 1,800 people. I don't know. Florida last year in the postseason, coming off a national championship, maybe two in a row. They care about softball down there in Gainesville. Their attendance in their regional for their first game was 1,534. So Ole Miss is going to beat that, compete with that. I don't know. Florida and Georgia played in the super regional, and Florida had 2,032 or something like that. So
it's going to be kind of nuts, which is crazy.
Kind of nuts.
Again, congratulations.
I'm interested. Like I'm kind of fascinated by the whole movement, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, I could go big school take with you here, but I'm hesitant to do it because I've already made people mad once today.
What?
With the baseball thing where I said the tournament doesn't necessarily matter. There will be some who say that just shows that you don't understand the value of an SEC championship.
Because of the softball winning it? Or are you just going back to the baseball conversation? I'm really confused all of a sudden.
Yeah, back to the baseball conversation. I was going to say, I do believe as football takes hits as a sport. I'm not talking about Ole Miss football.
But that is playing a role.
The sport of football, as it slowly comes down, and it is, and it will, something will fill the void. And I know girls didn't play football, but other sports begin to get more of the public interest. You can't deny what's happening like in Nashville right now with hockey. You can't deny what's happening with MLS attendance all over the country. You can't look at those things and go, oh, those don't matter. Of course they do. And I just think people are interested in different sports now. And I think softball is one of those sports that's gaining interest.
Is it possible that Nashville is having an Ole Miss softball moment because they're in the Stanley Cup final?
Yes, except for the fact that it's been really big there for several years. And now it's peaking. And so when this season's over, whether it ends in the Western Conference Finals or it ends in the Stanley Cup Finals, the interest level is going to increase. And if you talk to people in Nashville, there's more and more people talking about, hey, let's start youth hockey leagues. There's interest in that kind of thing. It's just changing. The sports landscape is changing. Talk to anybody at high schools around the country, and they'll tell you that football interest is declining. And before people go, why do you hate football? I don't. But I'm glad I'm covering football in my late 40s and not my early 20s. I don't think football is what it is today.
I agree with you on a lot of points. I'm just trying to think if I think that the Predators rise is because football declines.
No, but I'm talking about the Predators rise is because they're winning. And it's they've done a
The Titans still remain incredibly popular in Nashville.
But not as popular.
You don't think so?
No.
Because they suck.
Could be.
Patriots are more popular than the Bruins.
What's more popular in Nashville? And I don't know, I'm asking. What's more popular in Nashville area high schools, Nashville area youth? Soccer or football?
Well, I don't know.
I don't know.
But that doesn't create equal opportunity as a spectator sport, however, in America right
no,
now.
No, what I'm saying is that I think people, more and more people, are getting away from football being just their consuming sport and moving on to other sports, finding other things that interest them. And then there's absolutely no doubt about what's happening with youth soccer becoming this massive sport. And as those people become older, they don't know as much about football as they know about soccer. And that's why MLS, which is still a product that's trying to figure itself out, is enjoying rampant attendance rises. And it's cheaper.
Well, now that's true. That's what happened with baseball somewhat. They priced the family out.
Go to an MLS game, and what do you see? A lot of people in their 20s and 30s. Lots. And that's not an accident.
It's interesting. I kind of need to think about it. I've got a lot of thoughts, but we're just now starting to talk about it.
I'm just of the opinion that football has peaked, has hit an apex, and is now on its decline. And
now the question is, what's the baseline?
Yeah, and I don't know. I have no idea.
And it could get to 20% drop and stall and still be even with everybody else.
It will all depend on what happens with football from the youth league through the high school level. That's where all of your measurables will be there. What happens to kids who are 8 to 12 right now? What sport do they play in high school? Do they play football? Or does football become a lower class game? Because if it does, it's not going to have the financial support at the high school level.
And there's a lot of elements to this. I mean, I think still in the South, too, barring metro areas, a couple of them, not many. I mean, we're talking Atlanta, maybe Nashville, whatever. Soccer is going to continue to be hurt from taking a step, in my opinion, because the colleges don't play it.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Because you're so identified by your college in the South and in smaller towns to where the fact that there's not men's soccer, that's a detriment for the sport.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
They can't pick it up at that level and take it anywhere.
Right. So,
kind of like lacrosse is growing, but it's not in any it's a club sport, but it's not a varsity sport down here.
Well, that'll be some of the first signs that the schools are worried about football attendance and stuff. Do the schools start testing men's soccer?
Well, look, if you're right, in the SEC at some point experiences attendance declines or season ticket declines, however you want to phrase it, sold, not paid, not showed up. That's my money in pocket. That changes the entire dynamic of everything because I don't even, including soccer, I mean, we're so far away from even thinking about this. That would be such a financial drain on the school to the point absolutely. That everything would change drastically.
Absolutely.
I mean, we are decades away from a soccer team putting 80,000 people in a college stadium.
I don't know that it'll ever happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not the same thing. I don't know that it'll ever happen.
I don't think.
Not the same thing.
No. When I say this, people go, well, 2 years from now. I'm not talking about 2 years. I'm talking about 30 years. I'm talking about as generations where dad played football at the high school level and now dad doesn't. Now the son doesn't. The grandson doesn't.
I don't even really think this can be a hot take because we're talking about 30, 40, 50 years down the road.
Yeah.
You think football's this generation's boxing?
Yes.
Do you really?
Unless they can come up with a way to change this concussion story. It's a new story out today. Giselle Bundchen talking about how Tom played with concussions. What happens when these guys who are playing football now start dropping dead in their 50s with CTE and stuff? What happens then?
I didn't really expect this to go here. I'm just kind of curious, though. Is this it's interesting to me because it's such a juxtaposition because, yeah, there's no doubt at the higher levels, concussions are more prevalent for football. How is soccer avoiding the youth issue of being more dangerous than football at the youth level from a concussion standpoint?
Well, what they're doing is they're not like Carson's group, his age group. The heading is illegal.
To what age?
Like 12 or 13.
Okay.
But I think what they're talking about is making it just taking it out of the game.
Really?
Phasing it out that way.
Because I'd seen some studies where at the very young youth level, because they're so uncoordinated and just running around, head injuries were much more common in soccer than any sport, not even a football conversation, just any sport in general.
Now, I've watched all of his games, and I've yet to see a kid have a head injury.
Yeah.
I've seen a kid break an arm, seen kids sprain the hell out of ankles. I've seen kids get tackled where you're like, good Lord, that kid's going to break a leg.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't seen that.
Yeah, they're
not allowed to use their heads with the ball.
It's just kind of ironic to me a little bit because like an 8-year-old playing football, while I think it's too young, you're not going to have concussions in 8-year-old football because they're not moving hard enough to hit each other.
Right. If football's smart, it puts a real emphasis on coaching at the young level, teaching kids how to tackle properly, teaching kids how to block properly. Maybe even saying, hey, we as a sport think tackle football before the 7th grade is a bad idea. Putting more money into flag football. If you asked me to run football, that's what I would do. I would say, man, I can come up with a laundry list of people who had successful football careers who said there's no reason to play tackle football before the 7th grade. None. Who say?
But they were kind of chicken or egging because, like I said, a 9-year-old's not getting a concussion from
right.
football.
But you can develop really bad habits.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I mean, I coach 9- and 10-year-old little boys in baseball right now. They're not the most coachable people in the world.
No. Yeah. Interesting topic. But anyway, closing the softball discussion again. They play 8:30 Friday night. with the soccer tournament in town this weekend, we had talked about on the message board before about how hotel rooms booked. I talked to Lynette Johnson yesterday. They've been booked for a year. Every summer, Ole Miss goes ahead and books or allocates enough hotel rooms for every sport that can host an postseason event on campus if they are good enough on the field. So we're talking men's and women's tennis. We're talking softball. And for years, they've just went ahead and made sure all that stuff was done. This year, it pays off. And we're talking about a program that when Mike Smith took the job, they were coming off a 3-21 season in the SEC and had never scored a run in the SEC tournament. A run. So 3 years later, they're here. So I'm happy for all the people that have put a lot into that. I've heard some people that are gone and different things that are celebrating this success as well as that program has mounted to this point. But again, Friday night, all good from a hotel standpoint, all good from a regional. And they put the bid in April, and they're ready to go. So you can read more about that on the site at rebelgrove.com.
Be a good weekend for businesses in Oxford.
A ton of people.
Weekend after graduation, which used to be a sleepy weekend in Oxford. That is a massive soccer tournament, the President's Cup, out at FNC Park.
It's ages 9 to 17, boys and girls.
Right. It's if you've never been out to FNC Park, and if you don't live in Oxford and your kids don't play, you probably haven't. It's a remarkable facility. Baseball, softball, soccer, it's fantastic. There might be a youth baseball tournament going on this weekend too. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it has been a tremendous revenue generator. The soccer fields are immaculate. The baseball facilities are very good. So are the softball facilities, and it'll be packed. In fact, I think like Carson's first round game is on one of the softball fields. Mm. So it'll be absolutely packed out there. All of those people are going to eat in town. They're going to fill up their cars in town at the Oxford Exxon. They're going to go to the Oxford Crystal and get their mocha and their slushies.
And they got to stay in town.
And they're going to stay in town because everybody is going to play. You're guaranteed two games on Saturday and a game on Sunday.
Yeah.
So it's really cool that all that's in town, and then the softball regionals in town. It's not a bad weekend to run a business.
Quick update here. Ole Miss in the final round of the Austin Regional in men's golf. Everybody had a little worse day yesterday. The wind picked up. Lynette was actually in Austin and was talking about it. The wind picked up. Conditions were much more difficult. But the top five advanced to nationals. So you've got to stay essentially above this little line here that I'm looking at on the page. Ole Miss currently in third place in that regional. Texas is -5. Oklahoma State +1. Ole Miss +8. And then the two other teams currently that would qualify +10 and +12. So Ole Miss has a 6-shot lead right now over the 6th-place team, which is the important one. So they need to hold on. It's a little tighter than it was. It was around 10 or 12 there a little while ago. So other teams scoring a little more than Ole Miss as they get going. But, again, just getting started on their round today. Ole Miss at +8. They are even for the day, and they've got to finish top 5 to advance to the national finals. So that's where we are.
The podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you can want, all with the personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with a live person, all without having to press 10 buttons, no 5-minute wait. OUB has the absolute best free checking account you'll find anywhere. It's called Kasasa. It comes complete with cash back or interest options. If you have a Kasasa account, OUB will refund your ATM fees nationwide. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. The podcast also brought to you by Michael Oswalt. He is a realtor, specializes in recreational and timberland tracts across the state of Mississippi. He works with Tom Smith Land and Homes. It's by far the largest broker of land in Mississippi. Go to his site. It's gotland.com, got-land.com. The land market is very hot right now. If you're on the fence about selling your land, your hunting club share, or your home with acreage, now is the time. Give Michael a call, 662-719-3967. Check out his Facebook page. Send him an email, michael@tomsmithland.com. He's ready to meet with you, explain the process. He'll be the first to tell you if he can't earn your business in that meeting, he doesn't deserve it. So get in contact with him. Again, that number is 662-719-3967.
How sure are you that the NBA lottery is not rigged?
Oh, I'm positive.
Major markets all lining up, 1, 2, 3?
It doesn't happen like that every year.
Okay.
Boston made a phenomenal trade with the Nets years ago.
They did.
Stupid trade that the Nets made.
Just killed them.
Killed them.
And they get it next year, too. They get next year's pick.
Yeah, and which has a decent chance of being the first pick. And Danny Ainge has not traded that pick. Could have traded it for Paul George. Said, nope, you know, might not be our time yet. Boston also, if it can wait 1 year and not do the Hayward thing that everyone wants them to do, and I think Hayward's going to probably stay in Utah, so it's not a matter. They're going to have massive salary cap availability going into next year and potentially the first pick in the draft at perhaps the end of the LeBron window.
Really?
Well, the Celtics have positioned themselves.
5 or 6?
I think 5.
Do you really?
Boston doesn't match up with Cleveland well at all.
How many is this other one going?
Is Kawhi going to play?
Kawhi sure, for the heck of it.
5 games. Maybe 6. Probably 5. Kawhi doesn't play, it's over.
Yeah.
They can't win without Kawhi Leonard. I mean, they wouldn't have beaten the Rockets without Kawhi Leonard in a 7-game series. They wouldn't have beaten the Thunder without Kawhi Leonard in a 7-game series. They wouldn't have beaten the Grizzlies without Kawhi Leonard in a 7-game series. If you don't watch a lot of NBA, you don't realize how good Kawhi Leonard is. Undoubtedly a top 5 player.
Interesting. So,
Russell Westbrook became a dad yesterday.
Saw that on Instagram. Or I saw someone put his Instagram post up, I guess was how I saw it. But
Carson, hot take of the day. Ready?
Yep.
I hope Russell Westbrook's kid gets to kick Kevin Durant's kid. I'm like, you've really taken this grudge thing to another level.
You had to have emphasized this with him.
I did. I said,
you had to ag it on a little bit.
I did. I said at that point, I said, number one, Kevin Durant doesn't have a kid. Number two, come on now, Kevin Durant's kid's not to blame.
Well, he's the same kid that didn't want to go to bed at 9:35 or whatever it was.
Now, I respected that. He had just watched the Warriors eliminate Kawhi Leonard with a cheap shot, and he'd had enough. He said, can I go to bed at 9:36?
Nothing to do with 35 in it.
And I said, why? I don't want to do anything with number 35.
Okay.
Fair enough. Yep, you can stay up another minute.
Popovich has been pretty pissed off this week.
Yeah, it was absolutely ridiculous what happened to Kawhi Leonard. It should have resulted in suspension. You don't slide and then slide. Pachulia slid twice to get under Leonard. The Spurs were up 23. They were going to win the game.
Yeah. What's the reaction if it happens to Steph instead of Kawhi Leonard?
People be furious.
Think so.
But that's kind of Popovich's point. Is this wasn't accidentally sliding once. He slid twice.
It's the difference in dirty and reckless. Slide once, you're reckless.
It's the difference in throwing a fastball belt high behind a hitter.
Yeah.
and throwing a fastball
at his head
behind the hitter. One's dirty and rough. One's reckless, threatening a career.
Yeah. All right, more tomorrow. Again, Ole Miss and Auburn start Thursday. Softball starts Friday. Thanks to Austin for joining us today. We'll talk to you then.